Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I'm stupid. I missed it. Clock is off. Radio. I will wait for Bill for a few seconds, but otherwise we're going to get into some of the interesting things that have been going on this week. We're going to start talking about some of these races that are going to be, a route might be a nice way of saying it. We'll have to see how things run. Right now, as this very minute, we've got the third and final debate, Meg Whitman and Jerry Brown going on for governor in California. I would love to pay attention to that. I missed the first two. I think it was because they were on Tuesday nights, and I was with you guys. Oh, okay. So we'll have to see where that's going. The polls that I'm seeing is, as of course, everything is getting tight. And let's get some people going here. I think the most interesting one that's tightened up is probably Engel and Reed, although I really think it's going to be a situation where it's going to be the union people against everybody else, and if the union people don't get paid to vote, they won't go out. What say you, Bill?
Hey. Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. That race is within the within the margin of error. I guess the real story there for me, though, is Sharon Engel raised $14 million in the last quarter. That buys a lot of yard signs, get out the vote, television time, newspaper ads, brochures, and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
You can just dump it in, just dump it in the next 3 weeks. I don't know that Reed has anything except for smear tactics. I mean, it's clear that just about every race has already fallen into that position. The Democrats are certainly beyond belief smearing. Although, without paying a whole lot of attention to specifics, I'm sure the Republicans are not all clean and nice and behaving well. I'm sure from in places that I don't see it happening, the Republicans are talking trash and talking dirty. But around here, especially some of these props are just crazy bad.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that one on prop, is it 23, the one, or 25, I think it's 25, where they have, they want to put aside a tax increase for the benefit of green energy. They want to put a hold on this tax increase that's already been approved until the economy starts recovering a little bit. And the anti-forces have said that this proposition will end all clean air and clean water initiatives in the state,
yep.
And it will cost us $500,000 jobs.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And they start out the ad with, the two evil oil companies are funding the and actually it's not even a repeal, it is a, gosh, let's hold off on this until unemployment gets down to 5%, folks.
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
And, you know, and the initiative process here in California is still something that most people don't pay a whole lot of attention to unless they're out here. But it does have a tendency to show how, I think it shows the attitude of people in general.
Yes.
California is a truly bizarre state. not for anything, but, you know, a lot of people think that it's a really conservative state because there's lots of religious people out here. Couldn't be farther from the truth. There's lots of liberals. You know, you think San Francisco and you think, you know, any of the metropolitan areas, like, I, you know what, it's like any other state in that regard.
Yep. Yep.
You know, metropolitan areas tend to be liberal. Rural areas tend to be conservative.
Yep.
That apply anywhere in any state in the country. The only problem is, and I used to tell people all the time, you know, I could get onto Foothill Boulevard, which is a road down here, and drive for 4 hours and never leave the, you know, it would be, you know, residence, commercial, industrial, commercial, residential, industrial. You would always be in a metropolitan place for 4 hours, and you would get eventually end up with the ocean.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
The metropolitan areas here are just, you know, huge. The
megalopolis.
Yeah, so, you know, the urban areas just tend to be huge. Feingold is dead in Wisconsin.
Toast.
He's absolutely toast, and that is just amazing that in February, you know, they were laughing at the potential, you know, people running against him. There was no expectation that he had anything to worry about. I don't think he made any really serious effort until, like, June to even begin addressing things. By then, it was too late for him.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, he'd already been defined. And,
so,
and that's, you know, you cannot let your opposition, I don't care who you are, you cannot let your opposition define you.
You know, I heard Morris the other day, and, you know, he's right about one thing. There's going to be a lot of people that have been there for a long time that are leaving, and they're not going to know what to do.
Yep.
You know,
Dingle's one of them.
Yeah, you know,
okay.
It's just going to be a situation
years.
Where. Yeah. You just sit there and kind of go, you know, these people have never not been there, and
mm-hmm.
now it's going to be. I did suggest that K Street's going to be hiring like crazy in January.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And I suggested that any of these people that are leaving the Congress aren't going anywhere. They
nope.
have their houses. They have their nannies. They have their maids. They have their drivers. They have their residences already long established in D.C. They have no desire to go back to wherever it is they came from.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I can't imagine Harry Reid going back to, I think he's from
Nevada. Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Nevada, but I was thinking, I can't imagine him going back to, I think he's from Reno. I think he's actually from farther up north. I don't think he's from the LA, from the Las Vegas area.
No, he isn't. Trying to think of the little town that he is from, but
I can't imagine
escaping.
Him going back into Nevada and just, you know, I don't know, opening a law office.
Yeah, really.
He's going to be a consultant. He's going to be, you know, somebody that, you know, doing D.C. work. Of course, depends on how badly he gets beat. I mean, if Engel wins by 10 in Nevada,
mm-hmm.
which I really don't think is going to happen, but if she were to win by 10, I mean, just blow him out of the water. I think that's going to have something to say about his value in the future.
Yeah, I would not count that out. Hillbuzz, which is a blog site, and you can Google that, hillbuzz.com, I think. They had kind of an interesting analysis on it, and they were talking specifically about the Angle Reed race. But their comments really pertained more widely, and that is these people do not understand how angry the country is. And there isn't a poll that can really capture that. And as a consequence, even though you may see races tightening up or leading or, you know, whatever, there isn't anything that suggests that that anger isn't going to come boiling out in the voting process. And I suspect that they could be true. I suspect that those races that are toss-ups, no, they aren't really toss-ups. They're five or six.
Yeah, they're a 5 or 6 point winner at this point.
Yep.
You know,
exactly.
I think the only thing that's going to be close is anything that the Democrats are currently leading on. I think those races are likely to be close in November.
Yes. But you know what? There's not a bunch of them.
No, I mean, if the Democrat is losing right now, I think they're going to lose big.
Yep.
If they're inside the margin of error, I think they're going to lose outside the margin of error. Well, you're going to have somebody that's going to be close is going to be somebody that's already leading outside the margin of error. And I'm thinking about Coons and O'Donnell.
Yes.
Where he's leading by, I think, 6 or 7, which is outside the margin of error at this point. So, but I think that one's still going to be close anyways.
Yep. The thing that bothers me about the O'Donnell race is why in the world, I mean, if Coons is so far ahead, why in the world is Clinton? Why in the world is Obama? Why in the world are all of these theoretical heavy hitters going up there to campaign for him? Wouldn't their efforts be better used in closer races?
I think the situation is that what I suggested as far as how the races are is how they're reading it, and they don't want to be spending some of their political vision capital, their appearance value, on races that people are going to lose.
Yep.
I think they're going to the few places that, you know, has a potential of winning where they can say, see, we went here and we won. Rather than appearing, you know, although isn't Clinton coming out to Nevada? I saw that.
Yep. I think he's going to be a busy beaver.
Well, like I said, 10 states, 11 days, or 11 states in 10 days, something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Somebody's coming out, and I don't remember who, but it's somebody's, some big name is coming out for Barbara Boxer out here in California.
You know, the more I look at Barbara Boxer and Carly Ferrarino, just their visages makes me cringe. I have a lot to say about, you know, women and their, you know, vanity, but, you know, couldn't Pelosi just give up one shot each to them?
I mean, yeah, you know, right.
God. Between the two of them right now, I'm sitting there looking at it going, man, does the term old bag, you know, apply at all?
Yeah, I mean, really.
Okay, we're showing sexism. Okay, but come on. Neither one of them are an attractive candidate. Frankly,
yeah.
Neither one of them appeal to me in that particular way. And I have to say that Carly's ads are effective. Boxers are effective if that's your persuasion is to the left. Her arguments are, her ads are effective. I'm starting to see signs. You're wondering, saying, what's Whitman's agenda? As far as those races. And I'm thinking, you know, Brown is getting up on, I hate to switch races to everybody. I just went from Senate to governorship here. But, you know, Brown is sitting here saying, I'm old enough to be independent now. And I'm thinking,
Jesus.
I mean, you know, I've matured enough, now I'm an independent.
Yeah,
you know, before
really.
I was a stupid moron, young and democratic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I could read it. You know.
Yeah.
So God, he's so at 65 or 68 years old, whatever he is, he has now begun to become part of Churchill's thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
20 and liberal, you have no, you know, unless you're 20 and liberal, you have no heart.
Yeah.
40
yeah,
and conservative, you have no brain. You know,
yeah,
just taking Brown, you know, an extra 40 years to get to that point.
Apparently.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine him actually becoming conservative when he gets to the
No. He was a governor that, gosh, how do you say that? He was different when he was the governor, two terms. The guy was successful in terms of getting himself reelected. But he was different. I mean, you know, he did not follow any kind of a discernible pattern other than you could tell he was liberal in how he handled public employee unions, how he handled taxation, how he handled the issues of governance. I mean, you could look at what he did and say, yep, okay, sure, sure enough, he's liberal. But he was different. I remember living through him. It was like, oh, God, here we go again.
Well, I actually think, you might remember, when was he governor? I might have been here when he was governor.
Oh, gosh.
I was here from 7 to 80.
70s. Let me see. Don't know that I'm going to recall.
Came after Reagan.
Yes. Well, no, let's see. Reagan went from... He had a four-year hiatus. Reagan had a four-year hiatus between governorship and presidency.
Okay. So Brown,
that would have been 76. So, no, Brown was early 70s.
Okay. So I was gone. He was gone before I got him. Well, that's near the here or there. It was all a long time ago.
It was. Daughter-in-law, fool.
What I've come to believe at this point is, unless there are some serious October surprises, and that means it has to happen in the next 10 days for it to have any significant impact.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. 22nd, 25th, somewhere around the vicinity. Anything past that. I think we'll be seen for exactly where it is, and we'll backfire. So the rest of this week and next week should be any of the October surprises, but I don't foresee any of them at this point.
Well, I mean, God, they'd have to be earth-shaking. I mean, truly, for them to have...
Right, because, I mean, at this particular point, I'm a witch, apparently didn't have any impact on O'Donnell whatsoever.
Exactly.
Whitman's indentured servant, illegal aide, has had no real impact on hers.
Nope. Doesn't look like
it. So I can't see anything right now that would normally appear that was going to create any problems. What I think we're going to continue to see is a whole lot of diversionary tactics going on.
Yep.
And today a federal judge gave at least 2 days worth of diversion to any congressional races where you've got a strongly liberal facing a strong social conservative. The don't ask, don't tell ruling by the federal court, long ago expected as far as I was concerned. You can't legislate, you know, how people talk about themselves.
Actually, yeah, you can.
Okay.
You're right. You cannot legislate that. However, under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which differs markedly from legislation, acts, law, everything else, that is the purview of the Commander-in-Chief. And
I already know this point.
I strongly suspect that judge eventually gets slapped down.
I don't think what she did, and I think it was a she, or are we talking about something else? There's two stories here, two separate stories. I think the judge overreached as far as the injunction. I don't think the judge reached the wrong conclusion. I just think the judge would say it's unconstitutional. However, given the military and the executive branch and the legislative branch are already acting to either, address the issues, I think the judge could say it's unconstitutional. I'm staying any actions pending the completion of the review by the military and its review in Congress. Now, I don't think anybody would have had a problem with that. I mean, they could have made an argument that her ruling was wrong, or his ruling,
mm-hmm.
or whatever one it
mm-hmm.
was.
Mm-hmm.
To make the ruling, which I think would be is correct, and then just let it sit, and be part of the process. It just gives ammunition to too many people that think we've got activist judges.
Mm. Yeah.
And my opinion about that. The only activist judge is one that disagrees with how you think they should have ruled.
Mm. Well, you and I disagree somewhat on that. I mean,
because you also have, the captain whose trial ended, 3 weeks ago, who the court has told the military to reinstate. Military's been told to reinstate her. She's a captain. She was discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. She didn't ask or tell. It was an email or something like that that went between two other people, and then she was part of the process. In any case, most of her command testified on her behalf that her dismissal was more disruptive than her homosexuality. So,
Tracy, all of that is fine. The commander-in-chief has the ultimate say in terms of the military. Period. End of story. Courts can jump up and down all they want. The legislature can jump up and down all it wants. But the fact of the matter is, the commander-in-chief has the final say.
Well, I originally thought Don't Ask, Don't Tell was an executive order. Sort of remembered it that way.
It could have been. I don't know. I mean, it came under Clinton.
Right.
That's all I can tell you.
I was almost 100% certain that it was an executive order by Clinton. Just eliminate the problems that were there. But then I went, look, there's actually legislation that's enacted, making it part of, military conduct. So, you're right, in the sense that CIC, rules the military, but this is a legislative act that, you know, takes Congress and sticks it into the nose of what the military is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, while I wish I could keep more politics out of the military, you and I both agree upon that.
Yep.
You know, political micromanaging of military action is just tantamount to, you know, strategic suicide.
Yep, absolutely.
Maybe not strategic, but certainly tactical suicide.
Yep.
I just find it rather interesting that the courts have jumped into an area, and I think they've overextended themselves. I think they should, you know, they can make the ruling they want and then just stay any you know, anything that goes on with it pending the legislative and executive branches, you know, current ongoing process. You know, the legislature, the court could say, you know, it's unconstitutional, but it's something that needs to be addressed and is being addressed by the executive and legislative branches.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as that's happening, you know, the court's going to stay out. The court has rendered an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would like the court to have done in this situation. It renders an opinion. It's unconstitutional. Now, just
mm-hmm.
stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if nothing was being done in the legislative or executive branches about it, then I would say, okay, you know, poke them with a real general ruling. But they're already doing something.
Yeah.
So render an opinion and then let the process continue to go out.
Yep.
Otherwise, you know, you're going to end up with a lot of situations where, no, you know what, I don't want CIC making a decision about this.
Yeah, well,
and,
gosh, I'm sorry.
you know why?
Why?
Because what you're going to have is you're going to have some moron like Obama is going to get in there and, you know, say gays can serve openly, and then, and frankly, this is my opinion, you could end up with a moron like Huckabee getting in there 4 years from now or 2 years from now saying, no, they can't. Well, what happens to everybody that's in there that's already serving openly?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I don't want it to be a political football.
Well, unfortunately,
you know, and,
it's been made into a political football treat.
Yeah,
so,
it has.
You know, it's kind of like, well, okay, be careful of what the hell you wish for, because now you got it in the political arena.
Well, it got in the political arena because Clinton decided to bring it in the political arena, and he was an idiot.
Well, okay. I mean, I'm not gonna argue with that statement.
You know, he should have just done it and been it over with, and we would have had the last 16 or 17 years dealing with the issue, and, you know, in the military. Military would have by this time, you know, resolved its issues, you know, and we would have, it wouldn't have been an issue. Instead,
well,
he
placed, Tracy, what happens if the resolution of that issue, though, is counter to what you think ought to be done?
Then so be it.
Okay.
I don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
I don't. I, you know,
I mean, because that could be the upshot of what happens with this, quote, review. I don't think politically that's where it's going to go, but that could be, theoretically.
I served.
I know.
And while I wasn't particularly engaged in, you know, gay culture at that particular point in time, I didn't know people that were, and they served, and everybody knew that they were serving, and it wasn't an issue. It wasn't an issue.
Which was kind of a variation on don't ask, don't tell.
No, there was no issue about it. Everybody knew. You know, there might have been a few people in the brass that were idiots because they didn't know what the hell was going on in the squadron anyway. You know, and that's pretty much, you know that, and I know that. That's, you know, brass culture anyways.
Yeah.
80% of what goes on in the squadron is beyond their awareness.
Sure.
You know, if they haven't been briefed on it, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true.
Which is another problem. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of people that listen to this that are ex-military. Okay?
Yeah.
And I don't think there's going to be any disagreement about this. All right? I don't think the brass I'm talking about Pentagon Brass, okay, has any particular beneficial grasp on what's going on in the field than Barack Obama does what's going on, you know, in the neighborhood around his daughter's school.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And given many of our brass's decisions over the last 20 years, I'm talking about from Gulf One through everything else that's gone up to the Cole event, which, frankly, I wanted the commander of, of the USS Cole brought up on charges for that event.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that our military brass in the Pentagon has a really good grasp on things such that I would give deference to them on damn near anything. Most of them are political, you know,
animals. Yep.
Animals to begin with, so
yep.
You know, they're going to go the way the wind is, and of course Congress promotes them, so unless you have, you know, a sponsor in Congress and, you know, a political sponsor in Congress, and you, you know, function with whichever direction that political wind is blowing, you know, people get to the senior ranks by merit. That's my opinion in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I firmly believe you don't make the admiral class, the general class, unless you've got the merit. But once you get there, I think most, you know, there's nothing about merit from that point forward. I think it's all political. I mean, there are certainly some that are competent commanders, and Petraeus is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they are, you know, they're political animals, and I don't know that I'm willing to give them a whole lot of latitude as far as making political decisions.
Yeah.
Do I want military commanders making military decisions? Absolutely. Do I want them making, you know, morale decisions at the Pentagon? Are you crazy?
Yeah, really.
No.
Yeah.
No, first of all, most of them haven't been, you know, in a position of dealing with morale, you know, for years by the time they get up there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's
so
true. Yep.
So, field commanders, I think, would have a better handle on it. And they're not as, you know, tied into the wind. And I think if you deal with field commanders that have come out of the military that are not politically oriented one way or the other, I think the decision about gays serving the military, it's probably not evenly split, but it's certainly not lopsided.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 90-10. It's probably 60-40 or 70-30.
Mm-hmm.
It probably depends on whether they've had staff that were gay, openly gay, that they knew were gay and that functioned well in the commands.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they didn't create a problem with their sexual behavior,
mm-hmm.
which you know and I know happens among the straight people.
Sure.
You know, the only reason a tech sergeant in my command didn't get brought up on charges was because by the time most people knew, by the time the brass knew that she was fucking around with the captain, they had
mm-hmm.
gone to Vegas and got married.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and that's the only reason the two of them didn't get hung out to dry.
Sure.
But everybody knew that they were screwing around and just waiting for his divorce to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as his divorce was come through, they were gone. They came back married after a weekend.
Yeah.
You know.
For all of this, I think the thing that everybody loses sight of, regardless of which side you come down on the issue, and I don't care, but I think the thing that everybody forgets is our military is really designed to do only one thing, and that is break things quickly, efficiently, and over the top.
Well,
anything that gets in the way of that is a distraction and a disservice.
Well, I think this is a distraction to the military.
Well, I don't disagree with you. Maybe.
And I think it's used too often as a political football by people in the military, and I'm speaking specifically on the left, you know, to make political points.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, like, take that away from them.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad for the military, and I'd rather see it stop. The only reason I bring this up is because it's a distraction, you know, for a lot of other issues. You and I have, well, kind of agreed that if we can keep the social issues out of this election, that we're going to end up with a lot more people that are going to behave in a way that we want them to behave as far as the fiscal and defense issues are concerned. I'm already dismayed at some of the, you know, the social conservatives that are going to get in. I hate social engineering for anybody's point of view, good or bad. It's just the wrong use of government. And I no more want conservatives to be doing it than liberals to be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you and I, we're still going to have that debate on evolution. We're going to do that at some point.
At some point, we're
going to do that because, you know, when somebody gets in there, you know, Paladino. I think you were asking me to look into Paladino last week, weren't you?
No,
we were saying that I should look into Paladino.
Yeah,
and I thought, sounds good until Sunday.
which only went to your perception of a stereotype.
You know, I'm sorry. When someone says that, you know, that I'm not a valid person, and
that is not what he said. He did not say that.
Okay, that the lifestyle is not valid and doesn't work and not successful. That's what he said.
Okay.
That it's not a valid lifestyle and it's an unsuccessful lifestyle.
Okay.
Okay. Well, my family is pretty much proof of, you know, that it's a valid and successful lifestyle.
So you picked one thing out of all of the things that he said about that.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, you know, he said a whole lot more than that.
I just suggested
and I'm
that
not,
I'm glad
I'm
that
not,
I wasn't.
I am neither defending nor detracting from him. All I'm saying is you picked on one thing and ignored everything else he said.
Yeah. Why not?
And I'm saying, that doesn't sound real rational to me.
Sure it does.
I could
suggest that it goes to judgment. If I were him in his situation, I wouldn't have brought up the subject at all.
I don't think he brought it up. I think somebody else did.
He was in response to a question. But he didn't have to go where he did. I mean, come on, he's a politician. You know,
oh,
that's why he didn't need
so,
a 10-game pride parade.
So you would have been a whole lot more comfortable if he had said,
don't ask, don't tell.
And just let it go at that. Even though
stay
he really
closet.
Got all these other things.
Yes, stay in the closet.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, that's fine.
You know, that's basically been my suggestion all year to any social conservative running for office this year. You know, if you're anti-big government,
I thought you meant homosexuals stay in the closet. Okay.
In the closet.
I misconstrued what you said.
Yeah, stay in the closet. You know, I'll be really happy.
Well, that might make you happy. And I can understand why it would. Let me just say that, my own personal preferences are I'm a fiscal con, a defense con, a SOCON, pretty much in that order. The DEF con and the FISC con can switch depending on what's the most important problem at the moment. So,
right, let's talk about that for a second, okay?
Okay.
Because it's an issue that we get, you and I, get from people from the left all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, the first thing you say about you don't want government doing this and that and the other thing is people say, well, you're on Social Security, right? Medicare. And
yep,
you know, you
I
have
am.
To...
Yep.
Okay. So, of course, you know, they say, oh, you obviously don't have a problem with big government when it's coming to your pocket. You know, and you've answered it in a way that I think is appropriate because I've seen you answer it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, many other people do. You know, Victoria's for medical bill for the first month in California, based on the her stay in the hospital, the dialysis and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
Is working out to be about $187,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, even if we had perfectly great, typical insurance, our
mm-hmm.
bill right now would be approaching close to $45,000.
Yep.
Because most of her stuff is outpatient, and
mm-hmm.
most of the stuff doesn't include supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest chunk of her expenses at this point are supplies
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
patient stuff. So,
yep.
you know, most of this wouldn't be covered. We'd be eating, you know, that big chunks of that. So, yes, the insurance would pay maybe $120,000, $130,000 of it, but the
mm-hmm.
remaining $45,000 or $50,000 would still be our responsibility.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Okay. So
yeah,
the fact
right.
that the fact that government's going to be paying that, you know, I recognize that. And, of course, you know, Medicare is picking up the dialysis now because of the type that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Reasonably so because it's less expensive.
Sure.
Doing it this way. In any case, you and I agree that, you know, government has a purpose where there is no other place to turn to.
Yes.
Where that no other place to turn to does vary from place to place.
Yes, it
you
does.
You can't just say, you know, we're spending too much money on it, too many people are getting sick, so we have to pay for everybody's health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
The liberals tell us how nuanced we need to be.
Yeah.
Try to be nuanced, you know, all we get called is racist and every other name in the book.
Mm.
Because apparently they can be nuanced on their own position, just not on ours.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Oh, surprise. I mean, everybody's aware of it. That's the thing. How is it possible, okay, that anybody that pays any attention to politics has exactly the same take on politics? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're all too divisive. We're all too nitpicky. We're all
mm-hmm.
too biased on our own positions. And yet, you know, when the brass tacks hit, you know, we have no capacity to be, you know, anywhere, you know, moderate. And by no means am I suggesting moderate as opposed to conservative. Conservatives
right.
can be quite moderate in their positions. You know, I don't think there's a conservative out there that's against big government that has a problem with providing a safety net for those that need it. It's
that's
a really good
true,
use for a government.
Depending on how long does that safety net last. And if
right.
it becomes a way of life, then that's not really a safety net. That's simply a lifestyle choice.
Correct. Agreed.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in, you know, if somebody's on unemployment insurance for 8 years, just call it what it is. It's welfare.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Yes, indeed.
So we're not on unemployment. Somebody's been unemployed for 8 years, you know, they're not unemployed. They're unemployable.
That's probably true.
So, you know, all right. All of this is just distractions from what's going on in each of these individual races.
Yep.
Yep. I find it rather interesting that, you know, Hillary Clinton said that she wasn't going to do any races at all.
I saw that.
I find that rather interesting. Of course, she's saying, well, you know, my husband's out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As if to say, well, he's saying what I would say. Which I don't believe
maybe.
That for a heartbeat.
Exactly.
do I believe that she's going to run against Obama in 12? You know, if he continues to be, well, here's what I think about it. He's going to lose big in November.
Yes.
If he does not, using the Clinton phrase, triangulate over the next year, then I think he is going to prove that he is beyond incompetent. That he's the only thing I worry about is that somebody that's that desperate can do really stupid shit.
Yes, they can.
Prove that they're not. But I think if he doesn't triangulate next year, I think he makes himself out to be an incredibly weak candidate that somebody will be just dying to replace him with.
Oh, absolutely. And that could get interesting. But you know what? That brings up kind of a corollary point. In what kind of time we got? Yeah, I think I got enough time.
Yeah, 12 minutes.
We're all sitting here 21 days out from this election. We're looking at a wave election. We know we're going to take the House. We may take the Senate. And everybody on the conservative side is jumping up and down and shouting, hooray, hooray, we've done it. And we'll see what happens on November the 2nd. But, you know, we're definitely going to take the House. Maybe we take the Senate. So let me tell you this, folks. And you really need to pay attention. We are not going to, in this election cycle, in the next election cycle, or the election cycle after that, undo 100 years of progressive policies. That is not going to happen.
Nope.
So everybody who's sitting there with a tendency to pat yourselves on the back, say, we won, and then you can go back to sleep, are fools, and you are deluding yourself.
Worse than fools.
You have to, after this election cycle, you have to start saving your pennies and putting that in a separate fund so that you can finance that next cycle. And hopefully in that cycle, you take back, you keep the House. If you didn't take the Senate, you take the Senate this time, and you elect a conservative, not a Republican, a conservative in the White House. And then when that election cycle is done, you have to start saving up your pennies, and you have to do that for the next election cycle. Because if you do not, everything that you thought you had gained is going to slip right through your fingers. Because the left is nothing if not patient. And they will simply pull in their horns, lick their wounds, and come back with some other kind of stratagem, some other kind of tactic, some other kind of something that will further them on their road. So here's what you have to do. You have to prepare for that next cycle. You also have to be looking at who are the people that are going to replace what we're electing now. Let me tell you a story about a person I know on Twitter. Not going to tell you their name, not going to tell you their gender. But this person is 18 years old, was exulting that they got their absentee ballot in the mail, and they have voted for the very first time. Let me tell you something else about this person. This person is an office manager for one of three Republican headquarters in their city, 18 years old. In addition to that, this person has just been elected by the Republican Central Committee in her city, in their city, to be the chair of the Young Republicans. This person, I think, is going to a community college right now. and what they are planning on doing is selecting a college, not selecting a college based on dorm sizes, quality of the food, surrounding countryside, milieu of the collegiate atmosphere. They are anticipating going up to the Bay Area, actual hotbed of liberalism. Why? Because the Bay Area is only 2 hours away from Sacramento, and that is the pit of power politics in the state of California. Those are the people that you got to be looking out for, that you have to be encouraging, that you have to be supporting, and that you have to say, that's the person that I'm going to support in whatever it is that they do. And you get them elected to school boards, and you get them elected to the county supervisor slots, and you get them elected to the state legislature, and then they go national. Because if you don't, all of this goes away. Everything you fought for the last 2 years goes away. And you're right back where you started from. And you can't do that. If you want to save this country, if you want to say this country is on a downhill slide, we need to arrest it, then what I just outlined for you is what you have to do. Because if you don't, it will in fact slip away. That's my rant, Tracy.
That's not a rant. I think it's a perfectly optional, realistic point of view. Too many people have this idea that, you know, they can, you know, cheer on all the right people and get them voted into Congress, and then they can go back to their lives of not paying attention to their government.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think the Republicans are counting on it.
Oh, I am sure.
You know, I don't want one single, you know, I swear to God.
Oh, boy.
If another politician says to me, you have to be pragmatic, I am going to slap them with the nearest cricket board I can get my hands on.
There you go. You bet.
And you know what? I know this is going to happen. That somewhere between March and June of next year, the vast majority of Tea Party people, conservatives, are going to sit there and go, "Oh well," because they're going to betray everything that got them voted into that position there. You know, of course. If Obama doesn't triangulate, then we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, well.
Because if Obama just keeps coming up with, you know, bizarre crap, it won't be hard for the Republicans to say no to it.
I've never been comfortable with depending on my enemy to make a mistake.
Well, fortunately, at this particular point in time, we've got Obama. And, you know, I think we can depend on it pretty much, given the last 2 years. You know, especially in as much as he's gotten rid of Rahm, which was probably the only thing that was keeping him from being a complete and utter idiot.
Oh, boy, yeah.
You know, we'll find out exactly, you know, how much, you know, of Obama's balls just departed from Chicago.
Just left for Chicago. I like that.
I'm thinking,
mental image.
I'm thinking a whole lot of it.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh man, the ballerina dancer had bigger balls than the prez.
Michelle has bigger balls than the prez.
That's true.
Can we wonder who gave birth in that family? No, I.
Nah, we don't want to go there.
Want to start that kind of crap.
No.
Well, what else? There was one other thing that came up in the last couple days that was going to be another distraction.
Oh, God, there's a bunch of them. I mean, the Chamber of Commerce and their, quote, foreign money.
No,
we're just going to laugh from them.
You know, that was a White House thing, and let me tell you, the Democrats probably told the White House, shut up.
Yeah, really.
That's a kettle of worms we don't want to have anybody else looking into.
That's right.
There was something else.
God, what
that
else
was going to be a distraction?
Well, there's IOT in his Nazi uniform, but that's kind of a local race thing.
Yeah. I think we just got, you know, lots of little races where lots of little funky mudslinging is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was something else. I thought about it over the weekend going, you know, if this catches on more, we're going to have, this is going to use up some cycles.
Mm. Yeah. Well, you know, there's not a lot of cycles left, though. I mean, if you stop and think about it, we're 21 days out.
Nobody's going to
change their mind in the last couple, 3 days.
It has to be with where the mortgage things are going.
Ah. That's going to come back and bite them in the butt.
Here's what I think. First of all, this idea that lots of judges can tell mortgage lenders to stop foreclosures. First of all, I don't think that that's as bad a thing as people suggest it could be. You and I are probably going to disagree with this only because of your background. Frankly, I think if they put a nationwide moratorium on foreclosures, I think what people will say is, people won't want to lend and housing prices will crash. And I was sitting there going, yeah, and this is a bad thing?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and your point was?
Your point was? I'm actually thinking that that's a good thing. Seeing as how what the government's been trying to do and the Fed has been trying to do is to prop up prices artificially, you know, forcing them to crash down into more reasonable levels. You know, yes, it's going to be highly disruptive. It's going to create all kinds of problems in the economy.
Yep.
But, you know, as long as we're at the bottom, I don't think this is a crisis we can waste.
No, absolutely not. Well, not only that, I mean, median home price, 6 months or so ago was $217,000. Down to $176,000 now.
We got 30 seconds. We're going to have to finish this in the green room.
Okay. So, Arkansas Traveler, Mama Gurkha, a little bit sassy too. That's a new one, by the way. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it a whole lot.
Hey, I wonder why that didn't keep going. Come on.
Yeah, keep going.
It should be doing something, and it's not doing anything. All right. Well, 10 seconds, Bill. Have a good week. We'll talk
you too,
more
Tracy.
In the green room, and we'll start naming names as far as the races we're going to start following for November.
Oh, yeah.
Next week.
Yeah.
I'll see you in the green room. See y'all.
All right.
Foreclosures in the green room.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the green room, by the way.
I don't think it's a problem. I don't think it's a problem if they've stopped all the foreclosures. I'm seriously thinking about writing a letter back to the people in my old state about our experience. To the Supreme Court, to the judge that handled the foreclosure, to the attorneys that handled the foreclosure, to the attorney general. And look, you know, in our case, you know, the mortgage company didn't have the note. The judge ruled that that was a technicality, and once the judgment was granted, you know, the judgment took place of the note, so then there was no more issues to be raised. But the fact of the matter was that they didn't have the note, and it was a company that was different than what was on the mortgage. So how do we know that this was, in fact, the people that we should have been paying off or that even had the standing to do the foreclosure?
Exactly.
So, you know, the problem that I see is that I think I said this to somebody else. I've probably seen somewhere around 400 foreclosure packages in the last year and a half.
Wow.
And I would say easily 60% of them had, quote, a technical problem. And that's without doing any real deep looking into the issue that's being raised most commonly, and that's the robo-signatures on the affidavits.
Mm-hmm.
I know the affidavits are a flat-out lie. Everybody in the business knows that they're a flat-out lie, and they've been a flat-out lie for a long time. You know, all you had to do was see how
the mortgages were filing their proofs of claim in the bankruptcy cases to see that they didn't know what the hell was going on. The documentation sucked, and it was all kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
To know that, you know, the ones that weren't getting to the to court and being looked at forensically, you know, were probably legion as far as their number is concerned.
Sure.
I would certainly like to see a full-blown investigation on every single foreclosure package. I don't think that can happen. But leaving it to the banks to make their own assessment?
Yeah.
I was robbing this bank, but, you know, I'll investigate myself and decide whether it was a bad thing or not, and I'll let you know, okay, officer?
Yeah, exactly.
it's going to come back and hit Franny Fetty and, you know, in big ways. That's ultimately who owns a lot of this paper.
Well, they own 52% of it, was the last number that I saw, and I thought that number was low. But
I agree. I think it is low.
Yeah.
So, you know, really, I would like to see somewhere between $2 and $3 trillion locked off of housing at this point.
Yep.
And we could actually absorb that pretty well right now.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, once you're down so low, doesn't much make a whole lot of difference.
Right. This is a crisis. I agree. Alinsky rule. You know, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Go to waste. There you go.
I'm all for that particular crisis to go away.
Yeah, exactly. I
guess it's not going to go away.
Well, no. But it could get papered over, depending on what Congress wants to do.
Well, the problem is they're not in session right now, which means, you know, right now the judges are driving this.
Yes.
And a federal bankruptcy court has given permission for a standing Chapter 13 trustee to join in a class action suit against a couple of them for falsifying documentations.
Originators or servicers or what?
It looks like a servicer.
Huh. Okay.
And, you know, I want MERS hung out to dry. If MERS gets hung out to dry, I mean, that takes care of that deals with 50 or 60 states.
Mm-hmm.
That deals with 50 or 60 districts,
mm-hmm.
bankruptcy court. And the argument is that that payments in the Chapter 13 have been paid to the wrong people, and it could encompass, you know, somewhere between 5 and 8 years worth of bankruptcy filings in 50 or 60 districts and Chapter 13 claims in all those districts.
Wow.
Could be a lot of money.
Yeah.
Could be a lot of money.
That would be a ton of money.
So, of course, you have to be a Chapter 13 client for it to be part of the process at this point.
Well, and that's not the bulk of the filings.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So, I'm of the mind at this point that, you know, this is outside the hands of Congress to do a whole lot of impacts on, and, you know, I'd like to see the courts keep pushing on it.
Well, if they will. The problem is you can get a judge or judges that look at it and say, you know what, the cure is worse than the disease. Let's just stay with the disease here.
And going forward, we'll fix all the ones going forward.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe that wasn't the one that I was thinking of. Yeah, I mean, it could be big only because I'm aware of all the stuff that's going on with it.
Could be.
All right. Anything
could
else
be.
That you wanted to hit today?
Nope. I'm pretty much done. I'm ready to go shave and shower and get myself ready for bed here.
Mmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to go have dinner.
Okay. Well, I've got a board meeting tomorrow morning, so I need to get cleaned up and get ready for it. You betcha.
All right. We'll have a good evening then.
You
everybody
too.
Else, we'll talk week.
Yep.
Talk to you later.